so many of Foster's songs are far more famous than he was personally. Camptown Races, Oh Susanna, Old Folks at Home, Hard Times. These songs were part of the gold rush. They went all across the country. They were considered, you know, part and parcel of American folk song. They traveled across the seas when Japan opened up at the end of the 19th century and some of the first satyrs got there and the evangelical preachers were there and they brought these songs and they became part of the hymns and American songs. And then soldiers came after that, I should say, in World War II, and they heard these Foster melodies and said, well, how do you know these Foster melodies in Japan? I said, oh, no, those are Japanese folk melodies. So, no, it's not. It's Stephen Foster melodies. You know, the point is that, yes, Foster inspired just by the fact that somebody was writing such popular songs. And maybe this is a good time to remind everybody, and it's very interesting, that actually America has been unbelievably preoccupied with creating evidences of who they are in poetry, song, popular song, any kind of music from the get-go. I mean, our libraries, you know, the Library of Congress is just full of people you've never heard of and artifacts and songs. Songs. It's just, it's an amazing story. But you can't help but parallel the developments of the geopolitical world of America after the Civil War. The end of the Civil War is 1865. Then you have this obscene period called Reconstruction. And then pretty soon we're dumped into the Belle Epoque. Somewhere in there, we've had the first Great Depression. You know, at the turn of the century, we're into the unbelievable wealth of the Rockefellers and the Mellons and the Carnegies and all of that. So we're into the Belle Epoque. We are now into the world of Henry and William James. So song and music is taking a whole different direction. Edward McDowell is probably the most important academic composer, a student protege of Franz Liszt, was a very wonderful pianist, had his own neuroticism and breakdown, but left us a lot of great music. Charles Griffiths was a deeply sensitive gay musician teacher who was not allowed to live his personal life in any kind of publicness, died tragically too soon, but left wonders of musical evidence, especially in song. He was in Berlin when the first big brush and rush of Hugo Wolf, Lieder Abende in Berlin, and heard some of the great singers of the day. And he wrote Charles Griffiths, the American, wrote German Lieder. Then you, of course, you have this extraordinary young man named Charles Ives, who is going to Yale University, speaks German with his father at home. Edward McDowell spoke German. They wrote German songs on German texts in German, as well as American songs. It's, you know, it's a very lively interchange. All of them are slightly preoccupied with being real and being American. McDowell, probably the least of all of them. He just was following an artistic star, if you were, and was a very sensitive and beautiful human being, tortured personally beyond belief. Charles Ives just had a different way of hearing nature. And, you know, yes, was probably the first maverick, unique American voice in music. And to think he's writing all of his stuff sort of in and around World War I, and most of it isn't heard until 1950, is an extraordinary story in and of itself. His book of songs, the 118 songs, that he published himself and sent around to his friends with all sorts of wonderful personal parenthetic remarks, self-deprecating and very humorous and admonishing, published, I believe, in 1922. It's like the musical book of Norman Rockwell paintings. I like to call him the chronicler of American life through song, and that is a pretty unique event. He did arrange and comment on Stephen Foster melodies, and he loved Dvorak and his melodies. So it's, you know, it's a very lively interchange. But what I meant about the understanding the geopolitical development of America, what I mean by geopolitical, just I could just say political or societal development, you know, the America of 1870, the America of 1880, the America of 1890, and just in 10-year slices up to the unavoidable entrance of into World War I, are just hotbeds of very fast cultural changes and very disparate cultural influences inside of something called the United States of America. I think if you really look from 1880, what we call in Europe the year of the empire, the empire, from 1880 to the beginning of World War I, there's no lack of understanding the myriad cultural influences that are creating a singular tapestry called United States of America. And this is very much captured in our arts and letters and music of the time. And that is something I'm very passionate about. America after World War I is another subject